Gracious God, make us healers of ourselves, of one another, and of your creation. In the name of Jesus the Christ. Amen. Didn't sleep as well last night. It's, of the five sessions, this is the one I'm least prepared for. And so I went rummaging around looking for something. Of course, before I had a chance to read it, I found this in the library. The Faith Factor in Healing by Tom Droege. And Tom happens to be not a close friend, but a friend of mine. And I like this book just from looking at it, and I like it because I know Tom Droege, who has done a lot of work with the Wheatridge Foundation, which you may or may not know of. I brag about being an honorary director of the Wheatridge Foundation, so I plug it wherever I can. And Tom, in addition to having some, I think, deep understanding of healing, just reflected in the outline of his book, The Expanding Boundaries of Modern Medicine, The Placebo Effect, Faith, Healing, and Medicine, Framing Our Stories of Illness and Healing, The Use of Imagery in Healing, and The Use of Imagery in the Church's Healing Ministry. So Tom's got lots to say. I wish Tom were here.
He's with the Carter Center now.
Pardon?
He's with the Carter Center.
I was about to say that. You're right. In Atlanta, Georgia, doing some marvelous things.
Yeah.
In Atlanta, under sponsorship of the Carter Center, focused on health care for the poor and impoverished, and health care that empowers, not just takes care of.
It's church and synagogue-based health care.
Right.
And what's his last name?
Pardon?
What's his last name?
Droege, Droege. I said in the last session, you want to invite somebody to your area and have them speak in some churches about an issue like this, worth every penny of paying airfare and whatever to get Tom to come where you are. Droege, and I think it's a couple books. This is The Faith Factor in Healing.
He also wrote The Healing Presence, which is all about guided imagery.
Ah, good.
And he uses about 15 different parables from the Gospels as a takeoff for guided imagery.
Yep.
Very, very good book.
And I think that's the background for his chapter on the framing of our stories in here, too. Good. I had personal experience with Tom, too. My closest friend is Carl Lutze in Valparaiso, Indiana. And Carl's dear, dear wife, Esther, died a year ago, May. And as a friend, I was in frequent contact with Carl. And Tom was Esther, his wife's counselor by phone from Atlanta. We talked at least once a week. And I was very comfortable dealing only, although Esther's a friend of mine too, with Carl, knowing that Tom was taking care of Esther in very significant ways. And so I treasure this man too. Pardon?
Name of the book again.
The Faith Factor in Healing. Good. I'll leave it up here. It's a, who published it? Trinity Press, Philadelphia. I don't know. Trinity Press. So in desperation and all that, I chose a different text for today, the announced text. And I know everybody was reading this text in advance. So I switched from Luke 5 to Mark 10, mainly because I had some things written down about Mark 10 and that would make it more possible for me to try and to stimulate some reaction. So would you turn to Mark chapter 10, verses 46 to 52? And I'll ask someone to read that. Anyone?
I'll read it.
Good.
Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, that is, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man, cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you. Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. The blind man said, Rabbi, I want to see. Go, said Jesus, your faith has healed you. Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. Is that his heart real?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm going to let you stew about that for a moment, then I'll do make some comments and then ask you to join in, and I hope we can dig into that story. The context is, this is the last of the miracles and the stories that Mark puts together, and just in front of it is the healing of the another blind man at Bethsaida, the one that isn't named. And then the sighting, if you'll take that as a transitive verb, of the blind beggar wraps up this section. In between, Jesus talks about discipleship, including the James and John's go-for-it request of front seats in the kingdom. And the next stop after this is Jerusalem. And as I recall, they had no reservations at the Kidron Hilton. But the parade stops. And the blind beggar hears who's going by, and I always imagine rabbis going by, and crowds going by, and disciples going by, and, not just this isolated one. But when he hears who it is, the beggar cries out, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. I'm assuming, again, it was a pretty potent cry, because I think the noise was no small thing. And then who tries to quiet the blind beggar? The crowd? Pharisees? Lawyers? The disciples. The temptation is to say this is the institutional church, but we'll let that hang for a moment. But the blind beggar won't be stopped. He's trying to be quieted, and won't do it. For he has a name, not one of those many unnamed ones. He's the son of Timaeus. Bar-Timaeus calls out to Bar-David. Son of Timaeus, the son of David. Have mercy on me. And Jesus stops and ignores the disciples. The ears and eyes and lips and heart of God attend to the cries of the people. And mercy is given. My teacher, let me see again. Go, your faith has made you well. The straight words of Jesus. You poor roadside blind beggar, son of Timaeus, faith has given you wholeness. He wants to see again, and what is to be seen? A world in trouble, no less than ours. Then and now, wars and rumors of wars. Deficits in the White House and Capitol Hill, as well as in the budget. Long, long rows of blind beggars beside long, long roads crying, have mercy on me. And like most people, I think, God has two stacks of letters on her or his desk. One stack are cries of pain, and another is cries of terror. Have mercy on us. For we are all struggling with terror and pain. And pain and terror. A long time ago, Abraham Heschel, a true man of God, in my book, said the issue of, quote, quote, original sin in early Genesis is not pride, as many Christians wont to say and teach. Rather, in early Genesis, the sin is self-deception and how good we are at it. Deceiving ourselves, deceiving others, trying to deceive God. And therefore, I believe, pain and terror, for that's the road to feeling abandoned, neglected, alone, impotent. But there is a Son of God, a Son of David. Deep in our hearts, we do believe, planted by the Spirit, nourished by the water and the bread and wine, that Jesus the Christ stops the parade. And the Son of God calls us to come and to be touched and to be healed and to be whole again and again and again. Because of the love of God, we would quickly say, but more closely in the Gospels, because of the power of God. In Jesus' ministry, power is the attribute of God. All power is given. And what God offers through Jesus is unsurpassed power for life. Jesus lives as though God reigns, and no one else has power over God. That's the lifestyle. Nothing happens apart from power, good or evil. And as in our world today, we sit here as observers of the increasing shift of power from God to humanity, whether that's birth or death. A lot of stuff going on now for creating, if you will, life. Or if you haven't got your gift certificate for one visit to Dr. Kevorkian, for the end of life. Larry Rasmussen, and I think in imitation of Joe Sittler, some of you know Larry, who comes here frequently, and sainted Dr. Joseph Sittler from the University of Chicago and School of Theology in Chicago, that theology and change in our day is moving from a Christocentric theology in which we talk only about Christ all the time to a theocentric Christology, a Christ big enough for whatever is happening. Sittler, 35 years ago, who said to the World Council of Churches in New Delhi that that line that got him a lot of fame and I think did a lot of good to a lot of people, that redemption always, always swings within the orbit of creation. And that we need a Christ large enough for all of those things going on. That we're moving very likely from a time-oriented people focused on history and a future to a space oriented kind of thing that deals with the space where we are, where the space that is around us, and how space is used. I don't know what all that means. I don't pretend to. But I think that Joe and Larry as well have got their fingers on something that is going to influence a lot of us and probably change a lot of the way we think about God and our relationship to God. A Christ large enough to deal with whatever's going on that causes pain and terror, or absence or abandonment or whatever. Whether it's a nuclear something or an interplanetary something else or an information highway or Bosnia or Boston or wherever, or the District of Columbia. We call out to a theocentric and socially radical Jesus, I believe, because all power is given to Jesus in heaven and on earth. And the story of Bartimaeus and healing is about Jesus as a conduit of God's power in service to those who are in need. And I wrote this some time ago, but I hope you don't mind. As good feminists, all of us, we believe power shapes relationships. God's power keeps us from separating what God has joined together, public and private, social and psychological, transcendent and immanent, the holy and everyday, body and spirit, mind and body, theology and practice, preaching and healing. And as good feminists, all of us, we reject power over and power in behalf of as abuse and misuse, and we continue to explore and experience power with. God's power given in Jesus Christ to Bartimaeus to see again, and we take off on the road with Jesus to Jerusalem. And along the way hear other cries and proclaim and share the power. Power with is the power of healing. God's healing on a cross in Jerusalem's dump and the uttermost parts of the world and the innermost parts of humans. Power with is the power of friendship that we talked about this week. The Son of David calls Bartimaeus and you and me and says we're no longer servants, but friends. Son of David, have mercy on us. And is it all a dream? We have a doctrine, of course, and we have a dream. We even talk about gathering the hopes and dreams of all. The vision of Jesus is a dream. Fantasy, if you will, utopian. No place to stand within the present world. It's truly unrealistic. A virtual kingdom? The rule of God has never been realized. Totally, completely. It is God's dream. But that makes it different. It makes it our dream. And whether the world knows it or not, it is the world's dream that through God's power, we can also heal. A couple of questions are on my mind. Don't know which one to toss out first. One is, do you belong to a healing congregation? And of course, then the immediate question, what do you mean by that? And the other question is back to the text again. Where's the gospel in here? What makes this come alive? Why makes this more than just another story? So take your pick or anything else. You want to get up into?
What do you mean by healing congregation?
Well, have you ever seen one?
No, I'm not sure I have. Okay.
That's what I mean by a healing congregation. I think we would notice. Oh, I do mean a lot of things. One is that consciously taking, being aware of healing within the congregation and a healing agency in the community of body, mind, and spirit. I mean that thing. I do mean efforts at that. Parish nurses might be some of it. It could be only, you know, blood pressure taking or electrocardiograms or something like that. Or it may be a teaching ministry that enables people to take charge of their own health, which I think is and we spend most of our time in the first session about that because of the experience of a number of people who have been set up, you know, for surgery and other kinds of stuff, found out they didn't need no surgery, and only when they went to the third doctor did they find out that they really didn't need, and therefore made choices and are still going well today. So, I mean, some of that as well. A self-conscious community that thinks of itself as healing one another as well would be part of that. And, of course, a Lutheran traditional answer would be yes, because here is the Word of God, here are the sacraments, and therefore healing is going on. That's another way of looking at it. But what are you looking? Maybe nobody's looking for healing in congregation. You know, so.
I was going to say our church once a month has a healing time of a service where people are invited up to the altar for a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't just physical. I mean, it's anything that you require healing.
What's sobering and revealing about that service is you've got a third of the church up there.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, if you don't mind my reminiscing again, the first or second year I was here at Holden, and I can't think, this came to mind in the first session, and I can't think of the fellow's name. He was a pastor in Toledo, Ohio, and then ended up in Texas. I can't for the life of me think of his name. But that he, because doctors get bounced on, we were talking about that last session, where when we take over our own responsibility for our health care, some doctors feel they're being kicked out or whatever else. This fellow, way back then, 30 years ago anyway, once a year gathered all the healthcare people of the congregation. In fact, he sort of said, I don't care if you miss the rest of the time. He didn't really say that. But on this Sunday, and it was all announced well in advance, clear your schedules, I want you here. And said it in a much more inviting way than that. And there was worship and the Eucharist and a luncheon. And then the whole gang of people, MDs, nurses, technicians, whoever, in the healthcare stuff, talked with each other about what it means to be like there. And that's what picked me up is the pain there in that group was immense. That he wouldn't have got anywhere near, the people of the congregation wouldn't have got anywhere near, had they not lifted up a time for doing that. And I don't know whether that congregation in Toledo continues that or not to this day, but I thought it was a doggone good idea back then.
Our congregation, which I think would be pretty typical of most, you know, there's a big list of people to pray for in the church for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody stubbed their toe, somebody dying of cancer, somebody's, sister had a car accident, somebody's traveling across country, and they all kind of get lumped in at this thing, and this list in the bulletin.
Yeah.
And I have trouble seeing how that is really lifting up people for healing at times, and or really it almost trivializes. It's more of a sort of a rap sheet on what's happening.
Yeah.
Is there a better way to do things like that?
Anybody? Does that depend upon how you read the list? I mean, do you read out just a rap sheet with a bunch of people here, or do you lead us, hey, I know that person, he needs healing, I'll pray for him. These other people I don't know, but oh, it's too bad that John had this horrible accident, I'll pray for him, and you pray for him. And use that as a prayer list rather than use it as a gossip list to see who's sick and who isn't and who wants it and who's getting on the list and why isn't cousin family on there. So it depends how you use it.
Okay. Somebody else. Yes.
Yeah, well, also that will bring people, like Bob said, who know them. Some people will go to their house because they saw them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like you're not, no one person is ever responsible for that whole list. It's just how you're led, you know, how you're quickened mm-hmm. to do something. And some Sundays maybe you don't go to anybody's house, you know. So mm-hmm. I think it is that way. And then I think there are lots of small groups that will do some very one-on-one praying. Mm-hmm. You know, I can, my friends will pray for me anytime I ask for it. Right, face to face on the phone or anything, you know. But it's, everybody has their own way of doing that. And I have to respect that, too.
Okay. I'm a member of a prayer chain in our congregation, and we use that list weekly, as our, mm-hmm. no, or daily. Mm-hmm. But it gets updated weekly as our source of prayers. And then, you know, emergency calls can be made in, and we call each other. Remind each other to pray.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was going to say the same thing. We have a prayer chain at our church, and if anybody is ill, we're on it right away mm-hmm. and have prayers mm-hmm. until we find out the person has gotten through with yeah. whatever it is. I'm reminded a couple of years ago, there was a teenager whose father was, it seemed he was going to die in the hospital. And it was on a Saturday, and it was crisis time. And the teenage friends of this teenager, whose father was so ill, prayed all night. They got together at one of their houses, and they prayed all night. Well, the father lived, and he's doing very well. So it was an affirmation for them
sure.
that their prayer is really probably mm-hmm. helped.
Mm-hmm. And if he had died?
Yes. Then you would have to say, yeah. well, God sure. needed him.
Mm-hmm. Or I would say that the prayers helped.
Yeah.
One of the things, my wife died just a month before I came here as director in 1984, and she wouldn't let anybody get out of the room that visited her without understanding that God heals through death. That's one of God's healings. And, you know, we Christians of all people are not be hung up on the only place to be is here. Who knows where we have been, and certainly who knows where we are going. I believe we are going. And people say, oh, you'll be made better, you know, and all that stuff. Well, here, I don't know whether it was 50 pounds or what she was down to. Oh, no. There's healing going on, she said. And the final healing is going to be taking me, and that'll be healing. She understood that. And lived it and understood. We had the tough part. We were the ones who was hanging around and grieving. She was the one who was going. So both sides. One of the troubles about healing, and not trouble with prayer, but is that unless the requested end comes out, people may feel that it wasn't successful, and that we ought to be praying for the strength to survive in the midst of it. The strength to be comforted if you're going and you're not, or even if it's just going to be a painful operation, whatever it is. But also not to be surprised. My granddaughter, another story, Amanda, at 13 months, had a brain tumor. And operated on, lost a third of her cerebellum. And people all around the country prayed. Lots of people prayed. People here prayed. For her and family prayed. And she's the best reader in second grade at school now, plays soccer. And they did a little shtick on her on CNN, and the doctor, who by the way now has cancer, said, there's a miracle, strictly a miracle. I say she's a miracle if she dies tomorrow, because we had her for this period of time, and I'm great. So I believe that prayer does play into the whole process, into our psychological understanding, and often, like the disciples who were probably healers, when we are healed, we can become better healers, I think, too. And depend on all kinds of healing. That's why I think we ought to be at the forefront of alternates to healing, whatever the alternates to medical care of all kinds, whatever it might be. I don't necessarily believe particular kinds of health care and alternate care are the right ones or not. I don't know. But I don't think we have to be hung, nor do we have to play into the medical profession's idea that they have a stash of health somewhere that they will deal out. And we are responsible for our own well-being and health. And that's not, my brother died last June, a year ago last month. And when I'd call him, he didn't even know what he had. And he was desperately sick. He couldn't remember his doctor's names, not because he had Alzheimer's, but because they changed doctors so many times. And he had no idea what they were giving him. It was just being shoved around by the healthcare system. He may not have lived another minute or hour or day or year, but he surely wasn't responsible for his own healthcare. And I deeply regretted that. Some people tried to work on it. So in contrast to my granddaughter, where they really took over, they called 30 pediatric oncologists all over the country to find care for Amanda, and did find some good care. So, you know, both sides, yeah.
Yeah, I guess with this verse, I hold it special because I guess what I look at is personalization, that I can cry out, even though, I guess as a younger person, Lutheran church, you would be said, you know, don't do that.
Yeah.
We don't do that. Growing up in Augustana, Lutheran, you don't do that. You don't cry out. But that, you know, that sort of that same thing. Jesus looks after everybody. You don't need to cry out. But I see the beauty of that, where I can cry out, and I will get an answer. And as you say, the answer may not be my answer. I've seen it many ways with my mom and whatever. But we have that promise that Jesus, by our faith, we are healed. Mm-hmm. It's there. That it's just a meet me first.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting what he cried out. He says, mm-hmm. Jesus, have mercy on me. Mm-hmm. Which, if you take it in reference to his being blind, it's almost as though he's suggesting that Jesus is responsible for him being blind. Mm. Yet, one commentary I heard on the gospel says that oftentimes when in a story, when we expect Jesus to heal somebody, he forgives their sins. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when we expect Jesus to forgive their sins, he heals them. And I wonder if maybe the blind man is saying, you know, have mercy on me, forgive me my sins. And what Jesus said to him, go your way, your faith has made you well. Mm-hmm. That could refer to both too, to being healed from blindness and to being healed from his being forgiven for his sins.
Except this time, and that absolutely is true, this time he does say, what do you want me to do for you? Mm-hmm. And he says, let me see again.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he's specific. Yeah. So in another sense, he wanted to be healed, and so he was down the path already of being healed, knowing what it was, whatever was going on, that was the thing in his way. So, I mean, there was, in a sense, also his participation in the healing that Jesus certainly implies, and he says, your faith has made you whole. Yeah.
I wonder what is meant by when I hear people say, be careful what you pray for.
you might get it.
Yeah, so I kind of led into that.
Yeah. That's interesting. Okay. Somebody else.
The Lord's Prayer is full of all kinds of things we might not want to pray for. Forgive us our sins as we forgive the sins of others.
Mm-hmm. For thy kingdom come. Get out of the way.
Right.
Or would we recognize it when we saw it?
Yeah, please. The thing I was thinking of here was the whole psychological not seeing, and what when you said, how can a congregation be healing? And we have a fellow who's a director of a retreat center in Ireland come for our congregation last year. And he has for years done reconciliation between Roman Catholics and Protestants in Ireland. And
wow.
He's had tremendous success of bringing from teenagers to adults, women's groups and so on, and meeting together, learning how to talk. And he talked about creating safe space for them. Mm. And we got to thinking of what would a congregation be that could create safe space for people where they could tell their stories, where they could learn to see, where they could feel open enough to share their stories, to find healing in that. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing that kept coming to me.
Boy, I couldn't agree more. I think this has come up 4 or 5 times during the week, and I love being able to say this again and again. Ingrid's leaving today, and so she's. Did you hear? No, she's doing a writing workshop for the staff, the other staff that's here. People come in, and they do it at night. I don't know, 10:30 or something. They get together, and they do writing. And of course, shrewd Ingrid. It's really not a writing workshop, because everything they're writing about is themselves. And all of a sudden, they're going for hours, becoming a safe place where you can talk about all kinds of things. And, you know, somebody who knows a little bit about writing, too, and a little bit about listening, and just a little pocket among the staff, the volunteer staff here, not the teaching staff, the rest of the folk, you know, getting together and becoming a safe place. Just shrewd woman, great. But looking for that, you know, we talked about the congregation as a community or not, you know, and that I feel very few people look for a safe place in churches. How do we create those places so we can talk like this about healing, anything at all, or about death and dying, as Krista is doing here. Well, and the range of needs of body, mind, and spirit that we need places to talk about.
We've used home fellowship groups, which over the years have really helped. Mm-hmm. The number of them have rose and fall.
Uh-huh.
But, and maybe we get tired of each other after a bit, and we form up a new group.
Sure.
Those are special times of special people within the congregation we can call and we know real well, and I think they're strengthening the church.
You know, what intrigues me, one of the places I see that too, and I think this is the first time I've ever said this, although I've thought about it a lot, is suburban women and book groups. There are just loads of them all over the country. Some during the day, many now at night, because, you know, they're working, most of them during the day. And they get together book groups, and they do read a book, and they do talk about the book, but really becomes a friend of ours flew back to North Carolina for the 10th anniversary of the book group she belonged to back there. Because, also, she has cancer. And probably my dear friend Robbie may not be here through the end of the year. But that book group was her sacred, her safe place, and her sacred place, I say, too. So it may be that we ought to just enable and suggest a couple of books and get them into some deeper stuff, whatever it may be. Or fun stuff, who knows?
I have a Bible study. Oh, excuse me.
So you say you're always looking for the gospel in the passage.
Yes, sir.
And it seems to me there's about 2 or 3 different ways of looking at this, and it's all part of the gospel.
Uh-huh.
Part of it.
Sure.
Jesus gave this guy his sight. I mean, Jesus will heal, and part of the good news.
Sure.
The other good news is that Jesus will give you faith that you will heal yourself.
Mm-hmm.
She says your faith has healed you.
Sure.
Because so what gospel story do you want to take?
For me, all.
Good.
I'll grab everyone I can get. you know, one that, again, in the hope and in the belief that any one is possible to expand us and empower us to be the people that we know God wants us to be and God intends us to be. God intends health. That's a facet of the kingdom of God. That doesn't mean that everyone will have the same number of days or any of that stuff, but the goal is health. To be healing, to be healed, and to be healing people is what God is about. You had your hand.
Well, I was just going to say that I've been in the Bible study group for 8 years, Wednesday morning Bible study group. Mm-hmm. But there's many mornings we don't even get to the lesson mm-hmm. because it is a healing group also, and everybody mm-hmm. knows that mm-hmm. they can mm-hmm. talk about their problems, that they have support mm-hmm. and whatnot. And we taking other people in when they do start having problems, they will come to our Bible study group, and then they find out, and it really does help. It's been very successful in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I just wanted to add another possible example about a church trying to develop a community that's a community or a safe space mm-hmm. to talk about things. I saw at my mother's old church in Virginia, my old church in Virginia, a month ago, the pastor announced that they're going to have their monthly meetings of a men's dinner, where the only item on the agenda you could talk about items were religion and politics.
and you're saying this was a healing community.
I don't know what kind of community it is.
Yeah, good. It's good.
Sure.
Yeah,
the other thing I want to finish on this business.
Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
Was your faith has healed you? Mm-hmm. Is that saying then that if we don't have faith, Jesus won't heal us? You heard this many times. Oh, you don't have enough faith.
Oh.
Now, what about that? I mean,
For me, your faith is not gospel. That's something we do if you want to really push it and precise kind of an understanding of it. And as I think we've said here a couple times, that faith is given by God to us. And therefore, if faith does healing, it's still the power of God, and that God is empowering us all the time. But that we participate in that, you know, that we can reject the faith, there's no question about that. And that it depends on an amount of faith, I wouldn't do that. Because God hasn't promised healing of every kind. How many people did Jesus walk by and not heal? Lots. Lots of people in great pain. Jesus walked by and did not heal them. We better believe that. Because we have this, you know, this picture, then everything. You're going to say, I believe in God and everything's going to be nice. No way. No way. But that Jesus is with you in any and all of that. As God was with those people there, we believe, I believe, even when Jesus walked by. So the laying the trip on us, you didn't have enough faith or you had too much faith or whatever else it may be, we don't know why. I don't know why. Some people suffer all their lives. Some people are impaired all their life, body, mind, or spirit. And some people die early. Dear Mary. Or some people last too long for themselves. Why can't I die? Yes, Scott.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful. Listen to this. I was just thinking, maybe another question for us.
Sure.
For those of us who live in Christian community is the tension between comfort and healing. I think we've been really good in our communities historically at offering comfort.
Yeah.
I remember as a young child getting in the car with my parents mm-hmm. on a Sunday afternoon, and we did this religiously. going and visiting somebody. Mm-hmm. And often my mother would, bake a cake or even bring dinner or whatever, mm-hmm. Or sometimes just drop in. and even praying for each other. You know, I think often we would like the person to be comfortable, and we want to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And we'd like things to be like they were. Mm-hmm. You know, let's, could we somehow magically go back? Mm-hmm. Whatever it is that's bothering this person, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for those of us who have been sick at some point in our life, we know what a messy business that is, you know. You end up, you can't control your bodily functions. You end up naked in the middle of the floor with somebody else cleaning you, or naked in the bed. Mm-hmm. And those are the kinds of things that are part of the healing when we're really wounded. Mm-hmm. And I think we've not been able to do that. We haven't been able to be naked. Mm-hmm. You know, how many of us in our community could go and wash the body of somebody else? And if you think of that as a metaphor, perhaps, you mm-hmm. know, in a way as well. For example, in congregational life, it's, you know, there's the family with the gay son who's got AIDS, and can they mm-hmm. and can they talk about it openly mm-hmm. in the community? There's the family with the young girl who's addicted to mm-hmm. alcohol or drugs. Can they talk about that openly in the community? And there's even the family where, you know, she's got cancer and mm-hmm. she's afraid to talk about it.
Sure.
And she doesn't know how other people are going to react to her. And, or there's the person that's, you know, they just lost their job and they're frightened. Mm-hmm. And where am I going to find work? And, mm-hmm. Or the couple, the marriage is on the rocks and they're living separately. And I mean, one could go on and on
mm-hmm. sure.
About the real wounds, mm-hmm. you know. Sure. And what would it be like to be a community that could really mm-hmm. get into that stuff? Not just sort of, I mean, more than just hugging each other and saying, I
sure.
feel badly for you. Because it involves washing people when they're naked,
right.
you know, this stuff, this healing stuff. And I'm not sure we're there yet very much.
I don't believe we are.
As a church. And that may be one of the real challenges. It's more than just mentioning people's names.
For sure.
And all that's important. Comfort is not a negative thing. You know, comfort sure. and nurture are important things. Sure. But healing and transformation are something else.
Sure.
And I wonder if we're really ready to be a church of healing and transformation.
I think we are, and I see it. In contrast to some people, I see that not many places, much more talking about AIDS openly, much more talking about drug-addicted people openly in the congregation, in sermons, in Bible classes and stuff like that, in ways that just amaze me. I didn't expect it to happen this far. On the other hand, we're still hung. I don't think we'll ever be, you know, perfect. The same with Holden. Some people say Holden is in regression right now, and someday it'll go forward again. It'll come and go. But Kubler-Ross caught us on that one when she said, my gosh, the people that are in the way of healthy dying is the church, and especially the clergy. They won't let us die. To go through the full process of death, of separation. And we're afraid of doing that, just as we're afraid, somebody in the first session said, cancer. The parents say, I don't want the kids to know. You know, the cutting off the very people who can be, you know, part of it. And there is, for me, anyway, in slight reason, I went to 9 churches before I picked a parish to belong to. Looking for something, you know, that you could hang on to. And I still go to St., as I've told a number of you, I go to St. Leo's Catholic Church once a month, Phyllis and I do, to get a touch of that, because I think it is that kind of community that is open to this stuff. But I see little inklings of it, and gosh, I'm as surprised as I'll get out. But we got a long way to go before we can really do it. You know, and the bottom line stuff comes in. We start doing that, my gosh, we start talking about homosexuals. You know, what's going to happen to the offerings, people will say right away. You know, and so the bottom line will control us. Oh, boy. But I got these inklings, and I'm willing to share it. I mean, I'm glad to be able to say that out loud, because they were unexpected. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it brings up a question on how sacred is human life to God, and how sacred is human life to ourselves? Good question, because if we look at it, human life is not sacred, God is sacred. And human life is one of the things. And when we die, we should go to God, and should, and be happy about it. And God can say, fine, I'm graduating you when you're dying. But we don't look at that way, do we?
Well, but that God bothered to take on human life says human life is pretty important, too.
Yeah.
Why bother? Why did the Son bother to come? if this isn't a waste, this is important as well as whatever is ahead. Yeah, sure.
I think we generally all agree that the pace of change is increasing. And the problems I think people have is not so much the change, it's the transition between where they are and where they need to go. And I think the church, like any institution, is having trouble, I think, coming to grips with the diversity that's out there, not just ethnic, mm-hmm. but with types of people. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a tendency to sort of band together and circle the wagons with the people that we, and we all have that tendency to be around people that we like and we know. And I think where the church can help is by moving more toward tolerance and acceptance and opening up channels of communication, not realizing that they have to solve everything, mm-hmm. but to keep the dialogue open. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've helped form a men's group at our church, and I'm staggered by the inability men these days have to communicate. We had a workshop here at Holden a few years mm-hmm. ago, which was just astounding, mm-hmm. about the diversity of views about mm-hmm. men, about where we ought to be going. Mm-hmm. And single parents, I mean, there are groups that mm-hmm. I'm not sure are in the church. And I think if we can be tolerant, we can be accepting and keep communication open. Mm-hmm. That's a start.
Mm-hmm. And again, if the church isn't the kingdom of God, as certainly I believe, but is only the place that has a signal about the fact that there is a kingdom of God, then we ought to be really welcoming all the groups around that are doing healing and insights and whatever else it may be. Because again, we're out on our own to figure it out. Nobody's going to say, "Oh, this is here's God." You know, we have to search some of that out. And you know, I think I said the other day, my son Paul finds community in the fire department, mm-hmm. and bless him for finding it, because there are people who truly care one about another. Maybe because they want to protect themselves, but man, there's tightness there, and I would celebrate that. And I know Paul understands, and don't doubt that others do too, that whatever good is coming out of a fire department is also a good from God. And bless the name for that. And some of us change faster than others. You know, some of us are just doggone slow in changing, and some of us are fast, and maybe too fast in changing. And how do we live together? How do we accept people who are, quote, behind us, or, quote, ahead of us? How do we live with each other? Or as we said about friendship the other day, one of the dangers of friendship is just seeking like-minded people, that you can close out the world and have fun with my kind. And, freshness of different kinds of the, you know, where I'm trying to think where this was. To travel abroad and, you know, and to seek out the Hollandians so you don't get touched by the culture. You know? It's crazy, you know. Not being in the places where the people are. And then to remember that's true in my hometown, in Tacoma, that there's this whole range of places. North End is a nice little safe place for us to be, and I like it. but the Hilltop and Salishan is as much a part of Tacoma. And good, lovely human beings with pain and terror and with power live all over that city.
Well, some of it too is, like you said, change. Some people can't change because their circumstances have been so harsh that they're in a mode of finding safety. Mm-hmm. Like some people, like I'm kind of against guns, but there are some people who have lived in environments where it's so scary that they have guns, mm-hmm. you know? So the circumstances of, I taught in a school, Assemblies of God. Mm-hmm. I was the Lutheran person in there, you know, but that was a real healthy thing mm-hmm. for me because I could see quite a range. And you find out how people come to these different churches because of their different needs. And oh, yes. some need real structure to get them healed. And certain churches will offer, you know, they'll have these steps, but at that period in their life, they need those sorts of steps, you know, all different denominations and whatnot. So a lot of it is the way your brain works, you know, the circumstances. The whole process is different, you know.
Sure.
Like when you first mentioned the community over here, and then I come up with this purpose, and well, not everybody's going to do that because of the way, mm-hmm. you know, some of us are more quiet, some of us are more verbal. So change is slower, just like you said. Some change too fast, some change too slow.
And in the kind of society we live in this country too, where so much of the values and everything else are set outside of us, unconsciously or consciously, through the media, I think, and I'm not a particular media basher, but I think a heck of a lot of stuff is happening there that controls the values that we have for doing things or not doing things. I wanted to say that yesterday in Bruce's class, and I forgot it. That I've forgotten the teacher that wrote the book, maybe Phyllis would remember, about the importance of crap detection. They would have trained people for crap detection because there's so much coming at us from all around, on media, in schools, in the church, at Holden, wherever it may be, and how to discern, how to look through, and again, probably that's a lot of individualistic stuff as well. But that's why seeking the places that Scott was talking about, small groups or wherever, where it is safe and where the community can exchange idea, and maybe each one of us reshape and shape again our crap detecting abilities. Go and be a crap detector, but a healer as well. Peace. Thank you.